Would you give us your thoughts on one line of those cases that seem to be highly illustrative of this, at least from my observation, and that's the ones that headed the decisions that dealt with a problem of emotional or mental disability. There was the Dizio, Redfern line of cases. There were associated with this, in my mind, the Dressler. Was it the fellow that concealed his back injury? Do you remember that case? But speak to that a little bit, would you?
I will, but before I do, I'd like to just share a thought with you on the subject we were talking about earlier, if I may, about this vague notion of the collegiality of the court. We made it a point during my time there to get together socially with the spouses. And we did it always at the holiday Christmas time, a dinner, and at least one or two other times a year. I remember John Fitzgerald hosting a couple of magnificent Christmas dinners at his historic home in Grand Ledge, beautifully decorated in a way that reminded all of us of what it must have been like at the time his father was governor and lived there. And we had been invited to Soapy Williams' wonderful home in Grosse Pointe for a number of dinners and in other places. And during my last 5 years in the court, it became a custom, well, it was perhaps last 8 years, it was a custom that in order to enhance this collegiality, this respect for one another on a personal basis, all of which, as I said, was for its own good, but it was an effort to put to rest this terrible reputation the court had earlier. We agreed that we would go someplace once a year, just the seven of us, in what we called a retreat, for want of a better name. And we would have an unstructured agenda, and for 2.5 or 3 days we would meet in the morning and get off our chests whatever might have been on them, and in the afternoon rest, in the evening have a pleasant dinner. And we did that, I recall, 1 year at the Henry and Edsel Ford Mansion. That was a special memory for me. It was January, snowing heavily. Those beautiful grounds at the Ford Mansion were just that. Menon Williams was able to arrange for us not only to meet at the Ford Mansion, but to stay there for 2 nights. There were 7 bedrooms in the Edsel Ford home, which was just right for the seven of us. And the history, of course, which attached to the place, was impressive. And that was the beginning of a practice that lasted for the last 5 or 6 years of my time in the court, not to return to the Ford Mansion. But each summer, Nancy and Menon Williams hosted a 3-day retreat, which sometimes extended to 4, at their cottage, as they called it, on the west bluff of Mackinac Island. It was the biggest cottage in the Western world, as far as I was concerned. But during those days, the seven of us would be there with our spouses, relaxing, getting to know, and really getting to love one another. That's the only important, that's the only, I don't mean that in an emotional way, but to respect another person on the court, to appreciate the personal difficulties they might be having in their life without probing it, and to come to appreciate one another in a fraternal way was the product of those stays on Mackinac Island. Mary likes to tell the story of the first time we appeared, how G. Menon Williams, then the Chief Justice of our, and I guess he wasn't Chief Justice at that time yet, but certainly the former governor of Michigan, before whom everybody in Mackinac Island is accustomed to bow and scrape, had two domestic helpers at the cottage in Mackinac Island. One was a woman who had been a member of the domestic staff in the Williams home when Soapy was a child. She was, when we were on Mackinac Island, in her mid-80s, and a second woman who was almost that old, who assisted Nancy and Soapy at their home here in Grosse Pointe. These two ladies, as I say, were of advanced age. And so Soapy's practice was to be the servant at these dinners. He not only helped them in the kitchen, he jumped up from his place at the dinner table and would serve all of us. And I will always remember, as my wife does, the incongruity of this man of great distinction and accomplishment. Later, the Chief Justice of our court saw himself as a servant of the members of the court. And that carried over, the memory of that, when we went back to the conference table the next week and for the years thereafter. So those gatherings, I thought, breathed into the court as an institution a humanness, sensitivity, and a respect for one another that helped us immensely to express our disagreement on the cases in a more dignified and scholarly way than might otherwise have been the case. But these worker compensation cases divided the court radically and for a long period of time.
Were you there for the Honey West case?
Yes. I can't remember. You have to jog my memory. Honey West was the lady who wasn't sure who her husband was. Wasn't that it?
Well, she had one in Texas, but he was long gone, and she didn't. He was still legally her husband, but she had taken up with this other man and lived with him and took care of his breakfast and all that for a good many years.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
she was determined to have been, within the meaning of the workers' comp law, a dependent. And some of you thought, as I recall, that a dependent was like a child or a grandparent or somebody, and not the, live-in companion.
That's right.